You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. Hi, this is Tina Spindler, and I'm here with Katrina Kirkaby, and we are in the garden with the University of California Master Gardeners. Welcome to our show. Hi, Katrina.
Good morning, Tina.
We are excited because it is February, and even though in a lot of parts of the country February is still the depths of winter, in Southern California it's kind of springtime.
It's coming. It's exciting. We get to be back out in our gardens again.
Yeah, well, you know, we always have lots to do in our gardens in Southern California, but the good news is about February is that we can really start changing our mindset about the types of plants that we're going to be planting. And so that's always an exciting time for me when I start to plan my next season garden.
I know, it's so much stuff to think about. It's so exciting.
Well, and I don't know about you, Katrina, but I really enjoy my winter garden, veggie garden, because I love eating all of the greens and the snap peas and the cole crops like cauliflower and broccoli. But when we haven't had tomatoes for a few months from the garden, I really start looking forward to getting those warm season plants planted again.
You know, I agree with you, too. I love my cold season plants. And they're just absolutely yummy. And right now, my cauliflower and my broccoli and everything's doing really, really great. But then I'm starting to think about tomatoes.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't think about tomatoes? When you haven't had a vine-ripened tomato since, you know, October or November, I really start lusting after those. So what we want to do in February, we're going to talk about edibles first.
Okay.
Because that's kind of where my head is at this time of year. And I am... last month and at the beginning of this month have been perusing the catalogs from all of the seed companies to decide what kind of veggies I want to try this year. How about you?
I'm not quite caught up to you, but Tina is. I get so excited. I now get all the catalogs. You're a step ahead of me, Tina. But it's so much fun. Those catalogs, if you don't have time to order the catalogs, they give them away for free. You can go online and see what they have to offer. But the variety is just so much more than you can usually get down here.
Yeah, and yet in the last, you know, 5-8 years or so, it's the varieties that they've been carrying at the nurseries have increased substantially for edibles, particularly tomatoes. Everybody loves tomatoes, and a lot of the better nurseries, you know, now instead of having a dozen varieties, have, you know, dozens and dozens of varieties. And so that's really exciting. You can actually do your research and quite often find the heirlooms or the unusual, you know, colored tomatoes or unusual flavors actually at your nurseries these days. But you're never guaranteed that if you want mortgage lifter, you know, you may not be able to find that. That's a big giant tomato. I don't know if you've ever grown that one.
Yes, I have.
But, you know, you may not be able to find that at every nursery. So you may consider starting some of the veggies that you especially want to try from seed. And we've talked about starting from seed before. It's actually super easy. And I know, Katrina, you've been trying a few things from seed the last couple of years, too.
You know, there's pros and cons on seeds. You know, the pros, it's easy to do. It's cheap. If you want to go out and have a little project and maybe with the kids to look through magazines and find what you want, packages of seeds are really inexpensive.
And a couple bucks.
Yeah, a couple bucks. And you could really experiment. You know, some of us, though, don't have the time to really go and do that. And so that's okay, too. So
Absolutely. Here,
what we're trying to give you is an option. If you want to spend a little bit of time and energy, you could have a lot of fun. I mean, we do because we just love this crazy master
gardeners.
I was going to say crazy. Okay, we are crazy master gardeners, especially Tina. She is the catalog queen of this, but it's wonderful. I mean, Tina, you've taught me a lot on this, and I'm looking forward to this, and I'm getting ready to do it for the spring because I can get things that are not out there. Now, what do you find in the catalogs that you usually don't find?
Well, The things that I like to do every year is I usually try to start one or two varieties of tomatoes from seed, things that I don't think I'm going to be able to find in the nurseries. Because to be quite frank, you know, we all have relatively small yards, and, you know, I don't have room for, you know, 2-3 dozen tomato plants. I have room for maybe a dozen tomato plants max. And so it actually is a lot easier for me to just go buy a, you know, 4-inch tomato plant of several different varieties from the local nurseries. But when I read through my catalogs and I see one that I just absolutely really want to try and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to find it, then it's worth it to me to start some of those seeds. Now, the fact of the matter is, out of the seeds that I start, I'm probably only going to keep 2 plants, and so then I'm going to pawn, you know, the rest off on you or somebody else.
I'm ready.
So that is a slight disadvantage to starting from seed, as you often get a lot of plants that you can't use. But, you know, give them to your gardener friends. They'll appreciate them.
What else besides tomatoes do you grow from seed?
The other thing that I have grown from seed fairly frequently are some of the peppers. So, you know, the bell peppers, of course, you can get, you know, those at nurseries, and that's fabulous. But if you want some of the unusual peppers, and if you want to make sure that they're not too hot, often I can find, you know, jalapenos and other, you know, hot peppers at the nurseries. But, you know, I don't really cook with a lot of, you know, super hot peppers. And so I often want some of the more unusual peppers, you know, the banana peppers, you know, those long, long yellow peppers that are mild and have these great flavors. So I do like trying some peppers from seed. The other thing that I actually like to start from seed, which I direct sow in the ground, are the squashes. And I like to do that because typically at the nursery you can only find, you know, maybe 3 varieties of squash. You can find a zucchini. If you're lucky, you can find a compact zucchini, and that's what I always order from seed because you can't always find the compact zucchini plants at the nursery. And because I grow in raised beds, I can't have a zucchini plant that is taking up the entire raised bed because there's other stuff I want to plant. And then the final thing that I often buy from seed, actually every year, is the green beans. So green beans, I think, actually do better when you direct sow them. I like to direct sow peas as well in the cool season. And I love the French filet green beans, the ones that stay very narrow. And because of that, they're very tender and I think sweeter than the Kentucky, green bean that we often.
They also seem to be a little bit more forgiving. You know, the Kentucky one gets a little bit, you know, it gets, oh, you know, it's a little tough.
It does. If you don't water it exactly right, and if you don't pick it at the exact time, they do get tough. Whereas I think the French filet beans, I don't know, I just seem to have, I like to eat them better. And as we always tell everyone, plant what you like to eat.
And we all like different things.
Exactly. And, you know, my family doesn't like eggplant. I love the way it looks in the garden, but I quit planting it because, you know, what's the use of having this beautiful purple eggplant if no one will eat it? So those are my choices to grow from seed. And I, as I mentioned, the rule of thumb for direct sowing, you know, right out into the ground, is any seed that is big, so like a pea seed or a bean seed, or anything that is a root, like a carrot or a radish, you want to direct sow those right in the ground. You don't want to start them in pots. But the seeds that are small, like the tomatoes and the peppers, I sow those indoors in, you know, little 6-packs and get them to sprout indoors.
Let me ask you a few questions about that. Starting, because not a lot of people have done that. I mean, some of our listeners have, but a lot of them haven't.
Yeah.
So when do you think about start doing it? When do you do it? And how do you do it?
So you have to work backwards. So you first of all think about when you're going to want to plant these in the garden. And our warm season here starts about mid-March, right? Never know how our weather is going to be. Maybe it'll start in late February. Maybe it'll start in early March. But I know I always try to rush the tomatoes. And the years that I plant them in late February, I'll be darned if we don't have a frost the first week of March, right? So anyway, you're pretty safe if you wait till mid-March to get your warm season plants in the ground. Plants in the ground. So if you want a plant to put in the ground, you have to do the math backwards to figure out when you're going to plant the seed. most seeds need 6 to 8 weeks to grow into a size that is good for planting out in the garden. And so if you do the math back from the middle or end of March, depending on, you know, when you're going to be planting, that would put it right at the 1st of February that you want to plant those seeds.
We have a project for you guys this weekend.
Yes. So get your seeds right now and plant them. Now, it's no big deal if you plant them in the middle of February or the end of February. It just means, you know, that they're not going to go out into the garden until the end of March or, you know, the first part of April, which is totally fine for tomatoes and especially for peppers, because peppers don't do a whole lot until the ground gets warm. They'll just kind of sit there and hang out, and then they'll really take off growing once the soil warms up. But February is just a great time to get your seeds and plant them indoors. And then for the ones you're going to plant directly in the ground, I would wait until, you know, March to plant your squash and bean seeds. And you can do that, you know, all the way through May. So, but March.
Tina, don't we have a show on planting from seed?
I thought we did.
I think we have a show. So if you guys are interested, you can go to our website.
Yeah, and our website, because we have a new website, actually. If you type in the old one, it'll still get you there. But our new website is mgorang.ucanr.edu.
And if you're driving, just put Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. Make sure it's California, because there's several Orange Counties out there across the country. And we will pop up, and they're right there on the front page. Well, you could click on that, and it has a whole list of different shows that we have available for you to listen to.
Yeah, click on radio shows, and it'll take you to the list, and you can find the one on seed starting, which will tell you a little bit more. Just quickly, rule of thumb is keep those seeds moist. Don't ever let them dry out when you're planting from seed, because that will stop them from germinating. So.
And they like light, so yeah. Even though it's indoors, they need light.
Yes. So.
And keep them in a warm place,
warm
not too
place.
Hot.
Yeah. So, yeah, check out our seed starting show. But we have other stuff to talk about for February. So let's finish up edibles by talking about fruit trees.
Oh, fruit trees.
Yeah. Katrina just brought me a whole bowl full of oranges and tangerines and lemons, all kinds of citrus you just brought me a few weeks ago.
Our trees have just been going off.
Yeah.
So Orange County has a lot of orange trees. So, Tina, what do we do now?
Well, I think every house should have an orange tree when you live in Orange County, right? And a lemon tree and maybe a lime tree.
Every house definitely has to have a lemon tree. Or two.
Because we use them to cook. But anyway, let's talk about citrus just for a second, because it's time to fertilize your citrus. And you could have actually fertilized it last month, but if you didn't, you want to start in February for sure. And the other thing that you want to do is you want to make sure that you keep an eye out for pests. And after you fertilize, you want to mulch your trees. So what do you fertilize them with? Well, citrus use a lot of nitrogen. So they like a nitrogen fertilizer. But the easiest thing to do if you are, a little hesitant is, gosh, there are so many fertilizers, organic fertilizers that say citrus right on the bag or the box, that even I, who knows how to read the ingredients of the fertilizer, just do the easy thing and buy the box that says citrus food, because those fertilizers also usually have some micronutrients in them that the citrus likes.
You know, they've done it before. They know what the tree's like. You don't have to stress out. If you got a busy life, go buy some fertilizer either at your big box store or at your local nursery, and just nurture them.
Yes, and you want, of course, to read the box and follow the directions, which will tell you the quantity to give your tree based on the size of the tree. So,
now, Tina, I know a lot of people say, well, I'm a little is good, a lot's got to be better. Tell us about that thought
process. You know
process.
My husband, apparently.
Tell our listeners about the correct thought process.
not a good idea, especially if you are using a synthetic or chemical fertilizer, because that can burn your plant. If you're using an organic fertilizer, it's less likely to burn, but still, the best thing to do is to read the box of that fertilizer and follow those instructions. You'll have the best results. It will also tell you the frequency with which to put that fertilizer on your tree. And that depends upon, again, on what type of fertilizer, because there are time-released fertilizers. And if you're using a time-released fertilizer, you don't need to apply the fertilizer as often, because those often last for, you know, 3 months at a time. So choose your fertilizer based on your own personal choice, whether you want organic or synthetic, whether you want time-released or not, and just follow the instructions on the box. That's our main piece of advice.
You know, they would love to tell you to use more on the box because then they could sell more. But in reality, just follow the directions. You will have a much better product. You'll spend less money. It's easier. And just sometimes it doesn't seem like you're feeding the tree that much. And you're like, let me help the tree out and give it like double.
Yeah.
But that is a flawed thought process too. Just feed it what it says. Okay, enough of my lecturing.
No, it's good advice. We always advise folks to do that. The other thing that I like to do this time of year before the trees set their blossoms is to give the trees a good washing. And that seems kind of silly, you know. What am I going to do, take a washcloth out there? But basically what you do is you know those spray wands that you use to mm-hmm. wash cars with? You can use one of those and put a little, you know, those have the little reservoir container things that you put the car washing soap in. Well, you can actually put some insecticidal soap in there, or a couple of drops of plain liquid dish soap, and you can spray your citrus tree off. And the reason it's a good idea to do that is a lot of pests overwinter. And this year we got good rain, so perhaps, you know, the dust and dirt and the surface pests have been washed off by the rain. But it doesn't hurt to go out in early February and spray off your trees. If you use a little insecticidal soap or dish soap, you know, that's a mild insecticide, coats the bodies of, you know, soft insects, and can lower those populations for you before you've got, you know, some problems. Also note this month that pests for everything are going to start ramping up, because, you know, our days are going to start getting longer. We're going to get some of those great heat spells that we get in February where we can put our shorts on. And so that's going to encourage pest activity as well. And one of the biggest problems on citrus trees are ants. And so if you control the ants population, you often control both your aphid and your scale populations as well, because those silly ants are great farmers and they farm those other insects that produce honeydew that the ants then use as a food source. So by controlling the ants with either those baits, I like, you know, those baits that are on the stakes that you can put. I put one, you know, near each tree, and that helps. The other thing that you can do is get Tanglefoot, a product called Tanglefoot, and you tie like an old piece of t-shirt around the trunk of the tree, and then you spread Tanglefoot on it, which is this sticky substance. And what happens is, as the ants try to climb up the trunk, they get stuck in the Tanglefoot. So it may not be the most attractive thing to have a little rag tied around the base of your tree, but boy, it controls pests like nobody's business, or controls the ants, which then controls the other pests. So, and then the final thing that I always try to do is to add a layer of mulch after I've fertilized, a good 3 to 4 inch layer of mulch, because especially where I live, and even more where Katrina lives, once that warm weather comes, we really want that mulch there to keep the moisture.
You know, let me ask you a couple questions backing up a little bit. Regarding the ants and the ants, when you put Tanglefoot on it, do you put that on one time for the season?
That's what I do. I just find between the Tanglefoot and the ant stakes or some other sort of bait station, that I keep the population down.
And then do you put it out? Because I'm looking to tell people, do you need to do this on it? They're saying, well, how often do I have to do this? So if you put the bait station out and the Tanglefoot, do you pretty much have it for the season?
And I keep adding bait stations. You know, you can tell, depending on the bait station you're using, whether it's the stakes or the bait stations, you know, that you fill up, you can see when they're empty. And so, of course, we all know that in the summer, you know, the ants go crazy too, kind of. I think we live on a great big anthill, personally.
Well, I know. You live in Irvine here, and UCI is like the anteaters, right?
Yeah, exactly. We need an anteater, actually.
They're built on
an anthill. So I do keep up with the baits, all.
And I think it really depends on where you live, too.
You just have to watch the activity.
Yeah.
So.
But it's an easy way. It's and who wants the ants around, anyways?
Yeah. So you can if your tangle foot and your rag falls off the tree, you can always reapply it. It's just me. I tend to do get in the mood and do it all, and then there's something else that you get distracted by it. But
and if you don't have those two things, there's other products out there.
Right.
I think the idea is we love gardening. We love to have everybody out in the garden. So sometimes we do things early, then we will. Early, we don't have the biggest issue later.
Oh my gosh!
It's
yeah.
so much easier to correct the problem
if
before it's a problem.
If you control, your ants and snails—that's another thing we should talk about. If you control those early in the season and keep the populations down, you're not going to be without them, but you're not going to be as inundated as if you don't take steps to control them. And one thing I should mention about any kind of product that you're using: always read the directions and always wear protective clothing. The tanglefoot especially is sticky, so you do want to wear rubber gloves because it's hard to get off your hands if you get it on your hands. So do wear protective clothing whenever you're using this stuff. And then real quick, to finish up fruit trees, we then have our deciduous fruit trees, our peaches, our plums, our apples, and all of those great plants. And we want to fertilize those as well, and we want to look at those for signs of disease and pest infestation too. And we don't have time in this show to get into what to do for each variety of tree if you see a certain pest or a disease. But what you can do is you can go to our IPM website.
Tell us about that, Tina. That's an incredible thing.
That is just an amazing, so it's UCIPM, and you just put that in. It'll pop right up on the internet. You click on it, and what's great is when you get to that homepage, there's a home garden tab that you click on, and it has a list of the plants that you might be interested in, whether it's decorative shrubs like roses or fruit trees or citrus or vegetables, and you just click on whatever tab you're interested in. So for deciduous fruit trees, you would click on that, and then you'll have the whole list. And so if you're seeing something on your peach tree, like peach leaf curl, you can look that up and find out what you need to do.
Great.
So, how are we doing on time?
Oh, we're doing great on time.
Do we need to give a little station ID
at
this point? Not yet. Wow.
We've got another 8 minutes.
Wow. Katrina's the keeper of the clock. We don't want to get in trouble. We want to follow all of our rules.
We follow our rules and we get to stay on the radio.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, let's move on from edibles. I think we've got everybody excited about getting there.
You know what I like to say before we get on about edibles?
Okay.
If you plant from seed, that's great. If you don't plant from seed, that's great too.
Oh, yeah.
The idea is to plant.
Make it easy.
Make it as easy as you can. And I know everybody's got busy lives and some of us have more time to devote, but there's a way you could approach your garden if you're super, super busy, and there's a way to approach it if you have a little bit more time.
Oh, yeah. If nothing else, get a couple of wine barrels or large pots and do your gardens in those.
Yeah. Stick some plants in a pot and some vegetables in a pot. You were talking about, what do you like to grow in pots?
I love to grow lettuce in pots, and especially since I have only 3 raised beds for my veggies, when I've harvested my lettuce out there and it's getting close to March and I know I want to save that bed for peppers and tomatoes, I don't plant more lettuce in those beds, but I plant it in some pots because I know that I'm going to want to still harvest lettuce all the way to June. I just don't want it to take up my warm season growing space. So I have, I have just random 18-inch wide pots because I like wide pots because you don't have to water them as often, and I think they like company, so.
And you get more bang for your buck.
You do. And so you just sprinkle some lettuce seeds on top of that pot, or go buy a 6-pack of lettuce or a 6-pack of kale and plant that in a pot. And, you've got lettuce for months for 2 people. I mean, a 6-pack of lettuce feeds my husband and I for, 3 months or so.
Oh, that's good. I eat more than that. We go through a little bit more. But, you know, everybody's got their different tastes. Yeah, yeah. I tend to eat out of my garden. But I think what else Tina's trying to say is if you have a, you know, if you have garden beds outside, you can garden. And if you live in an apartment, you can garden.
Absolutely.
You know, and if you only have a small space, you could have vegetables. You could put a tomato plant in that pot as long as it's big enough. Or you could put lettuce in there. And there's a lot of, and a lot of these plants are very decorative, too.
Well, gosh, now you're going to make me talk about that, which, it's one of my favorite things to mention. When you're planting your tomatoes in pots, I like to get a decorative obelisk. So, you know, an obelisk is just one of those vertical trellis things, mm-hmm. And you can get some beautiful wooden ones. I've invested in some nice metal ones that I've had for 6-8 years. And they're expensive to begin with, but because you use them over and over again, you know, the cost amortizes itself. And what's really cool about it is if you put a beautiful obelisk in the center of your pot with one tomato plant that's going to grow through that obelisk, and you're going to tie it to the obelisk to keep it trained, and then you plant some basil or other herbs around the edges of that plant, you have something that is decorative and is going to give you some great bruschetta, or if you plant some other herbs around it, you know, you can make some great salsas. There are also marigolds and flowers that you can plant around the edge, and you can end up putting that pot on your patio, and it's actually a beautiful decorative thing that you don't mind looking at.
Sounds wonderful. Yeah. You know, and you don't, like you said, you don't have to have a big yard.
No.
You don't have to have a yard.
Not
and you could plant your vegetables. So there's
my daughter gardens on a rooftop in San Francisco, right?
So. You know what I got? I lived in Santa Monica. I lived in the second story when I was probably 20 years old, and I had along my deck. I was planting things that I could. I had no idea what I was doing, and I thought I was. Something came up, and I thought I had pickles. It was a cucumber, and
that is pickles.
Yes, but it was like,
you just
oh
have
my
to
God.
Turn it into pickles.
Yeah, but I didn't know, but it was just planting, and it was all on a second story deck.
Yeah,
and I had wonderful vegetables on a small area. So as long as you have sun, you can do it.
You need sun.
Six
hours of sun minimum. But you mentioned cucumbers, and I forgot to mention cucumbers. That's another one that I like to plant from seed. And the reason is I like to grow pickling cucumbers, and you can't always find those transplants in the nursery. And the reason I like to grow pickling cucumbers is I like to make sweet pickles. But the other reason is I like the size, because it's just my husband and I, and a big old long cucumber ends up going mushy before I end up using the whole thing in salads. But a pickling cucumber is actually perfect size to use in a salad, and a pickling cucumber is just a cucumber until you turn it into pickles. So
yeah, it's just a smaller one.
It's just a smaller variety. So
you also think about what you're growing with, how many people you're growing it for.
Exactly. So that's why I do the pickling cucumbers, and those you often have to buy plant from seed because you can't find the plants in the nursery. So anyway, lots of exciting things to do this month to get our edibles going for the warm season. And now it is time for us to remind our listeners that you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org.
Thank you, Tina.
Okay, so now I have some other pet things that I have to talk about in February. And one of them, even though we're getting away from lawns, I still have a small patch of lawn in my backyard, which I monitor the water on like nobody's business. And it's managed to survive through our hot summers with very little water, or a lot less water than it used to get. But one thing that I always forget to do that I want to remind our listeners who still have lawns, I always forget to do this in February, mm-hmm. and I really paid the price last year, is put down a pre-emergent for crabgrass. And if you don't do it in February, you end up with a lot of crabgrass, and it spreads over the years, because if you don't do it, then the crabgrass proliferates, it sets seed, it drops more seed, and so then you have more crabgrass every year.
Now, is that a pre-emergent for just crabgrass, or is it pre-emergent for other things that are coming up too?
Just crabgrass, as far as I know, but that's a good question. I should actually probably look that up. So I like to get an organic pre-emergent, and you just, you know, go to your local good nursery and tell them that you're looking for an organic pre-emergent. And the way to do it is to put it down in early February and then 2 weeks later to put it down again. And that helps, well, what it does is it's called a pre-emergent because it prevents the seed from germinating. And so it may not be 100% effective, but you will get a lot less crabgrass than you do if you don't put the pre-emergent out. Then the other thing that you should do for the remaining crabgrass that does germinate is in the fall, and I did do this year because I had so much crabgrass, I knew that I needed to get on top of it, is you want to pull out the clumps of crabgrass, and they're pretty easy to spot in the fall because the center of the crabgrass plant turns kind of a reddish color, and you can see it taking over the good grass that you want.
It's so pretty obvious.
It's pretty obvious. So anyway, I did spend a fair amount of time pulling out the crabgrass last fall. But I must, and I haven't done it yet, but I'll go out today and buy the pre-emergent, must put that down so that I can get this crabgrass under control.
And since a lot of us don't have quite as much grass as we used to have, we like to have what we have. It's
right.
Pretty nice.
The little bit that's left, and we do use it. We, you know, have a lot of barbecues and entertain and, you know, put some portable tables out there, and it's just a really pleasant place to spend summer picnics and or play croquet or bocce ball. So, or our new thing, because my son got one for a wedding present, is that cornhole game thing, you know, where you toss the beanbag things and try and get them in a hole.
Oh, yes, we've had that before with the kids.
Yeah, so anyway, so that'll be our new game this summer. So lawns still have their purpose. If, you know, if you use them, that's great. If you don't, you might want to consider switching to a drought-tolerant plant palette. So let's talk about that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
But backing up on lawns, you know, lawns aren't necessarily evil. You know,
no.
And we've been hearing so much about lawns. You know, our birds need grass, migrating birds, and there's a lot of, it keeps things cooler. But I think a lot of the problems that we've had is so much grass and then so much overwatering of grass.
Oh, my gosh.
So I still have grass, and I am under my water allotment. So you could still, it's not grass everywhere, but I still have grass and I enjoy it, but I'm just very mindful. Like, I've turned my sprinklers off right about Thanksgiving, and I haven't turned them back on yet.
I know, me too.
And as long as it rains about every 10 days, my yard's fine.
Yeah.
So those of us who are being concerned about our water allotment, we can have more than what we think we can have if we're mindful.
Very mindful. And since you brought that up, let's talk about a couple of things you can do to be mindful. So this time of year, if you have cool season lawns, the fescues, which a lot of us have, this is when they're actively growing, is in the cool weather. And so this is also a good month to give them some fertilizer. One of the things that I think is a good thing to do and should be easy to do since we've had a fair bit of rain is to also aerate our lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually aerate my lawn with just a hand aerator. I don't, you know, rent a machine or anything. My lawn is small enough, and that it's just a, how would you describe them, Katrina? They just have a handle and a stem, and at the bottom there's like these two
prongs,
and you just go around and you step on this thing, you know, every 8 to 10 inches apart, and you just walk through your lawn and you do this, and I'll do 15 minutes of it, and then I'm bored, and then another day I'll do another 15 minutes of it, and before you know it, I've got the whole lawn aerated. The aeration is great because that will allow the water, when you do irrigate, to penetrate more deeply, and when you fertilize and then it gets watered in, that fertilizer is going to go down to the root zone more easily. So those are two things that you can be mindful about this time of year. That's aerating your lawn and fertilizing your lawn and taking advantage of this cooler weather and hopefully a little bit more rain to get those lawns really healthy.
Yeah, and if you haven't paid attention to your sprinklers.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh. That's the first thing to do. make sure this time of year that you are not overwatering your lawn. We've had this great rain, and you can actually get a water meter that you can poke into the ground and see, you know, if the soil's wet. With all this rain that we've gotten, unless we get, you know, a lot of Santa Ana winds, you know, we should not be needing to water our lawns much, if any at all.
Yes.
As long as we get rain, as you said, a couple times a month. And then as the days get longer and the weather gets hotter, you know, water your lawn. But we've talked before about cycling the water, which means if it needs to be watered for 6 minutes, you don't put it on all 6 minutes at once. You do a cycle of 3 minutes, let the rest of your sprinklers come on, and then come back for a second cycle of 3 minutes. And that allows the water to penetrate more deeply.
Great.
So we were going to talk about natives real quick and drought tolerant.
Yes, let's talk about natives.
Because if you want to get rid of your lawn, this is a good time of year to do it. Or if you just have already gotten rid of it and you see some holes in your drought tolerant plant, planting area, this is a great time to add new plants.
Yeah, we're kind of running out of time because this is a good time before it starts getting dry and hot, because those new plants are going to need water.
They are. We actually start advising people to plant natives in October so that they have the advantage of our winter rains. But if you didn't get around to it, you can still do it this month. Actually, they say you can do it, you know, March and April as well. Personally, I prefer to do it this month because if you wait till March or April, they're not going to really get settled in for too long before the heat comes.
Yeah. So. You know, they're young, and they're like any plant. They're young, and they need to be loved and nurtured and get some time in the ground before you start heating them up and scorching them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you can and you want to add more natives or drought-tolerant plants to your landscape, be sure to try and squeeze it in this month if you can. Also, remember that you cannot mix them in with higher water use plants.
Yes.
They have to be on their own sprinkler station because you can overwater them if you're trying to meet the needs of higher water use plants. So,
you know, and if people are thinking about doing this, one of the easier ways of doing it is don't think you have to do your whole yard at one time. Look at one section where the sprinklers go off, and maybe just concentrate on the one section. If you think, oh, I can't get the whole yard done, just wherever that one section of the sprinkler is, think about what you want to do there, because you don't want to put a hydrangea or your old hydrangea and put something that's your old hydrangea next to
a ceanothus or something. Yes.
It's not a happy marriage there.
No, not at all. But let's talk about some of our more traditional landscapes. Roses, one of my favorites.
Oh, she lights up.
Yeah. I'm all about flowers.
Tina's our flower queen.
Yeah. So from a flower standpoint, you should have pruned your roses last month and dormant sprayed them. If you didn't, you can still do it in early February. So if you haven't pruned, prune and spray. And we did do a show last month in January on roses. So if you want more info about that, go to our website and play that show. But what you do need to do...
And it's not that hard to do.
No.
Okay, so listen, play that show, but just, if you haven't done it already, listen to that show. If you already know what you're doing, go do it now, because nothing's like the present.
And roses are very forgiving, so don't think you're going to kill them if you cut, you know, make a wrong cut on your pruning. It's okay. Let go.
Trust me, I know that one.
As long as you don't... prune it off at the base, it'll be fine. The other thing, though, it is one of the most important things to do to control the diseases on your roses is do be sure to dormant spray your roses and listen to that show, and it will tell you all about dormant spraying.
That's, and it's fun listening to the two of them.
Yeah, Kay Havens and I have had a ball recording that show, so that's a fun one to listen to, I hope. But the other thing you need to do with your roses this month, if you've already pruned and dormant sprayed them, is they're going to be sending out all their new growth. And as we told you in the rose show, you don't feed them when you prune them, you feed them when they start to send out the new growth. So February is the time when you want to feed your roses. And again, just buy a box of fertilizer that says rose food.
And they usually have a big picture of this red rose on there. It's easy to find. You go, oh!
So it will inspire you. Oh, yes, if I do this, I will get beautiful flowers. Roses actually need a fairly balanced fertilizer. You don't want one with too much nitrogen in, because then you'll mostly get leaves, and that's not what we want. We want big flowers. Mm-hmm. So you do want a balanced fertilizer for roses. So the best way to figure out what one to buy is to just pick one that says rose food.
And then how often do you feed your roses?
Again, you have to read that fertilizer box, because if you choose time-release fertilizer, you're going to be feeding it less often than if you choose a non-time-release fertilizer. But in general, you want to feed your roses after every bloom cycle. So you're going to feed them in February. They're probably going to bloom in April. And that first bloom is so magnificent. Ah, we just love it. And then when they're done with that bloom cycle and you deadhead them, you're going to want to apply another round of fertilizer. And that'll give you, you know, the next cycle of bloom about a month later, which is what we love in Southern California. We keep them blooming all the way till December.
So yours bloom all year long, I think.
They do. We force them into dormancy here by pruning them in January. They won't quit on their own. They just won't quit. And then also, because of that new growth this month, you're going to see aphids. They're going to love to come suck on those new leaves. And so you, again, want to really keep an eye out for any pests. And with the aphids, all you need to do is put that brass nozzle on your hose, the one that gives you that strong jet of water, and just squirt those aphids off whenever you see them.
Now, let me ask you a question, Tina. If people are saying, well, if her roses bloom all year round, why is she cutting them back?
Oh, my goodness, for health. Yeah. So we prune our roses to rejuvenate them, because if you've ever looked at your roses in December, you see a mess. It looks like, I don't know, if you had little girls and they had long hair and they woke up in the morning, it looks like a rat's nest. The hair is going every which way. Well, rose bushes are the same way. You look at those roses in December and they have got canes and weak growth and dead canes. It just looks like a rat's nest in the center of that rose bush. And so what happens is then you can't have good air circulation. You've got this rose trying to give food and energy to all these different canes, and as a result, nobody's getting a good dose of energy. And so your flowers start getting smaller, your leaves start getting full of fungal diseases because there isn't good air circulation. So the reason that we prune is we say, okay, time out.
You need
to have a haircut. We're going to open up, get that dead wood out. We're going to cut everything back to a strong growth node. We're going to prune out and get rid of any canes that are less than a pencil thick. All of this is in more detail in the Rose Show that we did in January. And that will end up rejuvenating that rose. I've got, 30 iceberg roses in my front yard. It's kind of ridiculous. But they put on this show that's spectacular. And my all year long, as Katrina says, even in December. And my neighbors say, oh, my gosh, what do you feed your iceberg roses? Because everybody in my neighborhood has iceberg roses.
But they're not like Tina's.
But they don't look like mine. And I just kind of laugh and I say, well, when I remember to feed them, I just feed them organic rose food. But actually, that's not why mine look better than yours. Mine look better than yours is because I prune them and I dormant spray them every January.
There you go.
So that is why you prune roses, is because they just perform way better.
Thank you. Some of us needed a reason why.
Yeah, I know, because it is a little bit of work, but I actually love to do it. It takes about 10 minutes per bush, and it's well worth it. So, but anyway, should we talk about a few more flowers?
Yes,
if we have time?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Okay, cool.
How about acidic plants?
Yes. So we still have camellias and azaleas blooming in the nursery. So if you love camellias and azaleas and you have some part shady places that you want to have these shrubs in, now's the time to buy them and plant them. Do remember, though, that they like acid soil. Our soil is not acidic, and so you do have to fertilize, you know, these plants with an acidic fertilizer to keep them happy. Mm. Also, if you're like me and you're in a newer part of Irvine in particular, I'm not sure what other communities have the reclaimed water. These plants often don't care for the reclaimed water as much as, you know, the potable water. So think about that. If you haven't had good luck with them and you do irrigate with reclaimed water, that could be one of the reasons why they're not doing so well. With the exception of the Sasanqua camellias, so the camellias that get the great big flowers are the japonicas, and they don't like the reclaimed water that much. But the Sasanquas don't seem to care. And the Sasanquas are actually more sun tolerant too. They're pretty much done blooming this time of year. But if you wanted to add a camellia and you want one that will take the reclaimed water and tolerate a little bit more sun, think about the Sasanquas as well.
You know, do you know you have me shopping? You have me shopping. I am going to go buy a camellia.
Cool.
And we have planned a date because they're all blooming right now. And
yeah.
It's so nice to go look at them.
Oh, it is.
When they're blooming, because when they're not blooming, they're like pretty.
Yeah.
But you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
So I have a date set, and my husband and I and our goddaughter are going to go out and find a plant.
Oh,
and make an event of it, because I'm going to have it for a while and I want to make sure it's something
yeah.
we like in our yard. And Tina took me into her yard a couple months ago and gave me the idea. Now we're going to go do that. But, you know, it's really nice right now if you plan on getting them, because it's hard to tell what, you know, people could describe them, but unless they're in bloom, how does it fit into your yard? And does that color go with the other plants in your yard?
Yeah.
And, you know, it just.
Well, I love the japonicas, and they're blooming right now. Oh, my gosh, those flowers can be, you know, 4 to 6 inches across. And they look plastic. They're so perfect. And I love them to pick, actually, because I like to float them in a bowl of water.
Mm-hmm.
And you put a couple of those in a nice crystal bowl on a dining room table. My gosh, gorgeous centerpiece. Really, really pretty. The Sasanqua blossoms aren't as bold and impressive, but I have you see it. You walk past it when you come visit me at my house. I have this Sasanqua apple blossom that's in a tree form. And that thing blooms for 3 months. I love it. It just finished blooming in January, but from October through December in January, that thing had blossoms on it. Just really, really good bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a good time to plant those. The other thing that's good to plant right now, it's a little too early to plant the warm season annuals that you may be familiar with, like the marigolds and petunias and those sorts of things. We want to wait till March to plant those. But it is a good time to plant the summer blooming bulbs, like the gladiola.
Oh, how
fun. So it's a good time to plant those. And the fun thing about those is they can be planted every 2 weeks for the next couple of months. And when you do that, then you have these sequential blooms. And so you have lots of, they're great cut flowers, you know. Three of those in a vase are just awesomely stunning. So I like to plant those this time of year. And it is time to plant the seeds of the warm season annuals if you want to start some from seeds. And goodness, cosmos and marigolds are super easy to start from seed. Cosmos were the first seeds I ever planted when I was 8 years old. My mom got me a pack of cosmos seeds, and she created a monster.
Not as bad as my mother did. I knew my mom liked flowers, and there was this lady who gardened down at the end of the street. And when I was like 4 years old, I came home with an armful of flowers that didn't belong to us. I knew they grew back.
But who could get mad at a four-year-old?
Oh, yeah.
So cute.
I was bringing my mommy a gift. This gardening thing was easy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like my son who brought me an armload of green tomatoes that he found on, you know, the tomato plants I had planted. Weren't ready to pick yet, but he thought they were just adorable and picked all my green tomatoes. So we had to wait an extra, you know, 4 weeks for tomatoes.
Well, fried green tomatoes are good too.
Yeah, didn't know about that.
You know, out of the little kids, what can you say?
Yeah. It doesn't matter. If they do something like that, just encourage them and give them their own little bucket garden to plant or something. So,
yeah.
But, you know, we were both converted at a young age.
Oh, yeah. And all this stuff is fun to do with kids, too. So if you're getting ready to garden and you have little ones around or grandkids around, you know, they like this stuff.
Oh, gosh.
And just be patient.
They're naturals. They're so naturals. And they learn so much from it. You know, they learn science in a way that they don't even know that they're learning. But, you know, they're learning about the cycle of life. They're learning about pests. They're learning about soil. it's just a great, which is why we encourage lots of schools to start school gardens. Which, speaking of that, if you have children or you have grandchildren, encourage them to have a school garden. And if they're interested or you hear that their school is interested, tell them to visit our website, which again is mgorange.ucanr.edu. Or ask them to email our hotline, which is hotline@mgorange.ucanr.edu. Because we have consultants, Master Gardener consultants, who will do a site visit at your kid or grandkid's school and meet with teachers or administrators who are interested in starting a school garden and work with them to identify a site and give them pointers. And we also have some seminars periodically throughout the year, as well as lots and lots of material that we can give them to assist them in getting a school garden started. So just a little plug for starting school gardens.
Yeah, Master Gardeners love this, you know, and there's a whole group of people that just love turning the teachers on because they turn the children on, you know, to gardening, and it's our next generation and what we carry forward, and it's just a healthy way to spend time with kids. And, you know, I don't know if there's any downside to all this, and we have a bunch of Master Gardeners that just love to give, and they're willing to give their heart and soul and teach you or teachers or the academics at the school what to do and point you in the right direction and kind of nurture you along.
Yeah, we're there to be basically free consultants, you know, to these schools. I've been involved with a school garden in Tustin for 6 years. And I go out a couple times a year and visit the garden and train the new parents who are newly involved. And every kid at that school is able to plant things from seed, harvest them, and they actually sell them. They actually have a little veggie stand where they sell their produce to the parents. So it's a great learning experience for them in a lot of different ways. So I encourage you to do that if you want. How much time have we got left, Katrina?
Oh, we got about 5 minutes left, Tina. What have we missed?
Well, it is a good time to talk about compost, perhaps, just briefly. And the reason that I want to mention compost to you is that as we switch from the cool season to the warm season,
great point.
We're going to be cleaning up our gardens. And if you had some perennial plants, you know, that had some dieback and they're showing some new growth, typically, one of the examples would be Mexican sage, right? So you'll see a lot of new growth at the base of that Mexican sage, so you'll want to cut off the old stalks that bloomed in the fall. And what do you do with all of that debris, right?
Compost it.
Compost it. Now, we have green waste bins, and that's a good place to put it too, but if you compost it at your own home, you're going to have this amazing... it's almost like black gold, I think. I save my compost and I put it on my roses or on my fruit trees because it's just so special that I want it on my very favorite plants. So think about composting. If you haven't ever done it, it's a great way to get rid of your garden waste on site. You can compost any of your green waste. And just briefly, we have a show on compost.
We have a show on it. Listen to our podcast.
So listen to that podcast if you want more details. But always at the change of seasons, it's a great idea to start new compost piles because you're going to have some good garden waste with which to do that.
You know, and it's fun and it's easy. When we bought our house, we were told we had one of those big dumpsters. And we were told we had to have this big dumpster. And we're like, why? And they said, well, all the green waste. Well, we got rid of that big dumpster 17 years ago and have never needed it. Because we compost everything from our yard. You know, we don't take the things that are sick or that have disease to it. But everything else goes into the compost pile, and we've had no need for it. So it can also save you money, too, if you start composting it. And that black gold stuff, when we bring it out, it's like, oh. And our plants, actually, I think they sing when they get it.
Oh, I had some citrus that was, you know, on it. I hadn't been paying attention to it. It was up on my slope. And I thought that they were probably goners. And, man, I put a layer of my homemade compost on that stuff because I also put chicken manure in my mm-hmm. compost bin because I have friends that have chickens, and they bring me chicken manure as a hostess gift. It's like the coolest hostess gift ever.
I totally get it.
Anyway, I put that in my compost bins, and you know, after the compost is done, I put that on these citrus trees that were struggling, and man, they popped back like nobody's business. So it is magical stuff.
And if you want to know more about it, we have a podcast on it. We also have lectures, so you can look on our website. Master Gardeners get a lot of lectures on a lot of different subjects. So if you want to learn something, and everything's free. So we just want to get, or most everything's free. A lot of it's free.
Yeah, I think it's all free unless we're doing a class that has a you know, a materials component, mm-hmm. and then there's usually a materials fee associated with it.
But there's a lot of great stuff out there that you could just come and listen to, and just check our website out.
Yeah, and do check our website out, because as spring ramps up, we will be giving talks all over the county. One venue in particular that I'm involved with is out at the Orange County Grape Park. There's a demonstration garden called the Farm and Food Lab out there, and its primary focus is edibles. So if you're interested in doing edibles, please come out, check our website. We'll have a lot of classes out there in the spring time that you'll find really, really fun. They're at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning. So lots of places you can go learn about gardening.
I think we're about there, Tina.
Well, good, Katrina. You and I have our marching orders on things we want to buy at the nursery and things we want to get out there and do in the garden. So
I made notes during our talk. Oh, yeah, I got to do this.
She has a whole page of notes that she's going to take home.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, another great show, and we'll see our listeners every week. Remember that our show is on Thursday mornings.
From 8:30 to 9:30, and if you can't join us at that point in time, just go to our website and listen to any of the shows that are of any interest to you.
Yes, the podcasts are great for keeping you distracted while you're doing housework. That's when I listen to them.
A lot of people listen to them while they're doing housework. I'm like, however you listen to it is fine with me. It makes it go faster, right?
Exactly.
All righty. Until next time, till next week, we thank you and have a joyous week, and hope you spend some time out in your yard.
Happy gardening.